Okay, Parshas Yisro. So Yisro shows up. Yisro is Moshe's father-in-law. After the splitting of the sea, and the Jewish people make it out okay at the end of last week's Parsha. So Yisro comes into town, meets up with Moshe, and Moshe describes to him and tells him over all of the amazing things which took place. And Yisro was very joyous and happy for the Jewish people and for his son-in-law and for his grandchildren. And all is well. The Torah described in the beginning of the Parsha, so he's hanging out with the camp, and he sees a situation which he finds to be intolerable. Moshe is, of course, the principal teacher of the Jewish people. He's the one who's not only teaching them Torah, he's the one who's the consummate judge involved in all of the disputes and anything which may arise. And Yisro sees that from morning until night, Moshe is standing in judgment, he's dealing with the people, he's helping them out, he's answering questions. And he tells him, this isn't going to work, Moshe. You're going to surely wear yourself out. You, the people, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the people who have to stand waiting around all day. It's not good for you who are sitting like this. Everybody needs some time off. So he says, we got to set up a different system. And of course, sets up the system of the judges. So what I'd like to discuss this morning, I found to be a very interesting study as we went through. He gives them a list of requirements, what the judges should have. What are the characteristics of the judges that should fill in for you, Moshe? Who should you find from amongst the people? So the Torah gives a list of four things. So I'd like to go through them. Working through each one of them has a lot to say on them, why these are specific, and a lot, I think, for us to learn from them. But I guess I would start with the question. If you had to choose three or four characteristics, here you're starting from what would you like to have, what should it be, what should the characteristics of the judge of the Jewish people be, and you have three or four to choose from, what would you go with?
Leadership ability.
Leadership ability, excellent, right?
Judgment.
Judgment, how would you measure judgment? What does that mean, judgment?
Intelligence.
Okay.
Honesty.
So those are some extra ones. Intelligence. That seemingly should be a no-brainer, right? You can't be a judge if you're not an intelligent person. Honesty seems to be an obvious one. You have to be honest, was the only one you just said. Mm-hmm. Integrity, honesty, or leadership.
What about the relationship to Hashem? How much Hashem is in, in line with this person, like happy with this person?
Okay. Well, we wouldn't know that. That would be an important... Okay. Yeah, anything else?
Wouldn't be bribed.
Sort of the honesty approach.
Integrity. To be analytical.
Analytical. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what the word would be, but they have to be able to not be biased, even if somebody is their friend or their associate.
Good. So, guys, we've had a bunch. That's all filling in. So, if we categorize, we have a bunch of different ways of describing the honesty, integrity, not being biased, not being subject to bribes. As far as that goes, we have the intelligence, we have their spiritual stature. Excellent. I think those are all valid. We'll see a lot of those threads coming through a Yisro once. But there's a lot of discussions. I think this will be a very, very interesting discussion. So let's look at what Yisro actually says. It's on page 398, 399 in your Chumash. The beginning, the top of this page, this is towards the beginning of the Parsha, in which Yisro was basically saying to Moshe, like, what are you doing all day long? And Moshe saying, what do you want me to do? The people want, they're seeking out Hashem. They want to come close and they want to know His Torah. They have little disputes. I have to be here for them all day long. So Yisro responds, let's start with Pasuk Yudches 18, Avol Tibol, Gam Ato, Gam Ha'om, Hazeh Asher Imach. You will surely become worn out, says Yisro to Moshe. You, the people, Ki chovei mimcho adavar lo suchal asohu levadecha. It's too much to be done. You cannot possibly handle this yourself. Ato shma v'choli iotcha v'hi elokim imach. Listen to my voice. I will give you advice. Hashem will be with you, and things will work out. Let's do a pasuk chav. You will be available to teach them regarding the decrees and the teachings of the Torah. So in essence, I don't want to focus on this. What he does is he separates the teaching aspect of Moshe and the judging aspect of Moshe. Moshe, you'll be the teacher, you'll still teach them the way, you'll show them how to come close to Hashem, but let's just take this judging aspect. Let's take all of these disputes and the civil court. It's a drain on your time and on your energy and resources. Let's set up a system that will handle that so that you're free to do other things. And Chaf Aleph 21, this is our verse which we will focus on this fine afternoon. V'ata sechazeh mikol ha'om. And now you, what you should do is sechazeh, literally to see, to seek out, to discern from all of the people. Here are our four phrases. Anshei chayol. Difficult phrase to translate. Anshei chayol. Let's leave it untranslated. How would you generally, what does a chayol mean? What's that?
Soldier.
Chayalim, right? A chayal is a soldier. Anshei chayal, how do you translate Eshes chayal?
Woman of valor.
Right? Woman of valor. We don't translate her as a woman of the army, right?
Mm-hmm.
What does valor mean? Everybody knows she's an Eshes chayal, but what does that mean? A woman of valor. I mean, just in English, what does that mean?
Strength.
Okay, so chayal, which comes from chayal, the soldier, strength, a woman of strength, of valor. So anshei chayal, we're going to have to translate this. This is going to be a tough one to translate. The first thing that Yisro says, and it's like hard when the first thing that he says is something that you really don't know what he wants, but you need to find for yourself anshei chayal. Find for yourself men of chayal. Number two, Yirei Elokim. Fearful of Hashem, that's easy enough to translate, difficult to accomplish, but easy to translate. That's their spiritual stature. They should be God-fearing people. Number three, Anshei Emes, people of
truth.
That seems to be self-evident as well. They should be Anshei Emes. Sone Vota, and they should hate Vota. Now, Vota also is a very difficult word. It means, at least we'll see in the commentators, four different meanings throughout Tanakh when the word Betza is used. Ma Betza, the brothers say, for example, to each other, by Yosef, Ma Betza, what benefit is it to us to kill him? What will we gain? Sometimes it means oppression. Sometimes it means bribery. Sometimes it means money. So there are a lot of varying words, meanings of the word Betza. And we'll see what the commentators here say, but they must be those who hate Vata. You'll see Rashi, or at least the art scroll here, translated in the most basic way of meaning money. They despise money. It's going to be based on Rashi. So we'll at least leave it at that. What exactly does it mean? They have to hate money? But that's a characteristic. So what are the four characteristics that we have that Yisro posits that Moshe needs to go out and discern? Anshei Chayil. People of chayil, of strength, or of valor, I guess, if you will. We'll see what that means. Anshei chayil. They need to be Yorei Elokim. They need to be Anshei Emes. They must be truthful. And they must be haters of money. Sone Vata. Santaleh, and then you will place them as the officers of the thousands, of the hundreds, of the fifties, and of the tens, and they will be the people who will then come and judge. Those are the people whom you need to find. Okay, so let's get started. What does this mean? Excuse me. What does this mean?
It says in here, tell money of me, people of means.
Mm-hmm.
People of means don't usually hate money, do they?
Okay, a fair question. Is that the way that Art Scroll translates Anshei Chayil are people of means, which means they seemingly have money, so it would be an odd thing that they should hate money. We're going to make that question even stronger in a moment or two. That is a good question. That is a good question. You'll see Rashi is going to be bothered by the question, as we will see in the way that he goes about his commentary. All right, let's start with the Ramban. The Ramban, first of all, is going to say, he's going to give two variations of his understanding of what it means to be an Anshei Chayil, but he's going to say something even more important than that, which I do not believe Rashi is going to agree to, but I will start with this Ramban anyway. The Ramban holds Anshei Chayil is a category, and the other three things, fearful of Hashem, fearful of God, haters of money, and, what was the third one? Being truthful, are specifics. So that Anshei Chayil means that sums up the entirety of the person. To be an Anshei Chayil is something, how do you become an Anshei Chayil? You become an Anshei Chayil, an Isha Chayil, if you have those other three qualities. So that this first category is what you need to be. Find for yourself, Moshe, men of Chayil. What are men of Chayil? Those are people who are fearful of Hashem, truthful, and hate money. What is it? So what is this Anshei, this Ish HaChayil, says the Ramban. Anoshim, says the Ramban, number one, Ru'uyim lehanhig am gadol. People who are fit to lead a large nation. That's, as I said, the Ramban writes, this is just a category. Find for yourself people who are fit to lead a large nation. Not everybody is fit to be a leadership. Exactly what Sam had said, leadership qualities. How do you become... If you want to be a judge, you must be a leader. You must be a person who has the ability to lead, who is fit to lead in Am Gadol, ki kol kibbutz ve'osif yikra chayil. What way is he interpreting the word chayil that he comes to the conclusion that it means able to lead? Anytime he says you have a large gathering, or an important gathering, that's called chayil. And he brings various things. He says, Einenu biyotzei tzavo hamilchamo bilvad. It doesn't mean just those who go out to war, which are called chayil also, and chayalim are the individual soldiers of the chayil of the army. Anytime you have a gathering of something, that can also be referred to as chayil. And he brings various verses throughout Tanakh, in which we refer to, based on fruits or property, different things are all called chayil. And the way that it would manifest itself here is that in a chacham, you would be a zoriz v'hayashar. A wise person would be somebody who is quick to act, who is straightforward in the way that he acts. That's how you are a leader of people. In the same way that a leader, a chayil of a war, is somebody who knows how to fight a battle. In the same way that he writes, an Eshes Chayil is a woman who knows to be Zeriza Vyodas beyond Hagas Abayas, a woman who knows how to be careful and adept at running her home. She's an Eshes Chayil, she runs her home. An Isha Chayil, a person who runs a war, knows how to run a war. And an Anshei Chayil, an Isha Chayil of a judging system, would know how to manage people. That's what the Ramban writes. That's what you need to choose. People who are Anshei Chayil, who know how to manage. What does it look like? It looks like those following three characteristics. Honesty, Anshei Emes, hating money, which I have to understand what that means, and fearing of Hashem. What's the proof, says the Ramban, that Anshei Chayil is just a general term that means leadership quality? Because if you flip just one page, when Moshe actually goes out to find the people, on the top of the page 401, Moshe listened to the voice, heeded the voice of his father-in-law, did everything that he said, and Moshe chose, Vayivchar Moshe, Anshei Chayil Mikol Yisrael. What happened to the four characters? He needed to find four things. He needed to find Anshei Chayil, fearful of God, people who speak the truth, people who hate money. And what does the Ramban, what does the Torah say Moshe went out and he found? Anshei Chayil. He found people of whatever this means. Says the Ramban, this is my proof. It's just a general term. Yisro only really needed three characteristics. He needed them to be truthful, fearful of God, and haters of money. Anshei Chayil just defines that's what they are. And that's what you see in the next verse. When Moshe went out and he found them, he found Anshei Chayil. That's all that the Torah says. And the Torah defines it as Moshe did everything that his father-in-law has suggested, and that's who he appointed to be the judges. What about wisdom? Where is that in the list? Yisro says, fearful of God. That's not wisdom. Doesn't mean analytical, right? He said he needs to be haters of money. They need to be honest. And have leadership qualities, which according to the Ramban defines that. Where's wisdom? Don't you need to be smart to be a judge? Isn't that the first thing? We said that.
Yeah.
But Yisro didn't say that. So the Ramban writes, noticing its obvious omission, the Ramban writes that it was unnecessary to state. That's what he writes. Chachamim u'nevonim, he writes, did not need to be stated. Let me just read you his words inside, so you'll take. V'lo chutzruch lahazkir chachmasam uvinasam. You don't need to even mention that they should be wise and intelligent. Ki hadover borur shehu bechlal anshei chayil. Because the way that he defines anshei chayil is somebody who's fit to lead a large group of people. It's clear, if that's a defining characteristic, that you're capable of leading, that you know what to do with a large mass of people and how to manage them, it's included within that you're going to have some level of intelligence, and therefore Yisrael did not feel the need to say that any further. What he needed to delineate was being fearful of God, hating of money, and being truthful, but that they are smart and intelligent did not need to be mentioned, but says the Ramban, it's obviously there, and part of the required characteristics of a judge. Okay.
You suppose that haters of money is not an accurate translation.
We're going to talk about exactly how to translate. Well, we'll work on that. I'm leaving that just loosely translated. Let's go one at a time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something isn't. Why would Moshe not ask Hashem here? He says he listened to Yitro, and even Yitro says, and if you do this thing, and Hashem commands you. Because it seems, I was wondering how Yitro would come up and all of a sudden, like, pretend, you know, start telling Moshe how to behave. And Yitro even suggests it, and if God commands you, and then it says Moshe didn't speak with Hashem, just like, boom, went into it.
Good question. Maybe next year we'll get to that. I don't know. You know, sometimes the funny things you say as a speaker, like, you don't necessarily think are so funny, but the audience thinks it's funny. Someone asked me a question when I was trying out to be a rabbi in Toronto before taking the job here. So I had applied in Toronto as an assistant rabbi of a very large shul, the Bayit in Thornhill, with 800 members in the shul. So I gave a woman shir Shabbos afternoon on whatever, I don't remember what it was. And at the end of the class, someone asked me a question, which I had no idea what the answer was. So I said, it's a great question. Why don't you ask next week's candidate who's coming to speak to you that question? I never got a roar from a crowd.
Actually,
I think it was like, I don't know, try next week. See if he knows the answer. But I thought that was funny.
That's good.
So ask the Chumash speaker next week. Maybe he'll know. Okay.
When you talk about leadership, it's a two-way street. People, the mass of people, have to accept this individual as a great leader.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. So they would. So I'm just thinking in terms of his intelligence. People will probably not accept as a great leader someone they think is.
Excellent. Okay, you're proving the Rabban says, in other words, not necessary to say.
The other three.
Yeah.
People have been known to follow crooks.
Yeah. We could debate whether or not people only follow intelligent people. You know, that's debatable.
I think that's people will think that they're...
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that they are.
Smart, able to...
Yeah, a good speaker doesn't necessarily have to be extremely intelligent. I mean, you have to be a certain intelligent people, but you can get people to follow you. I mean, that's, people throughout history have been, very capable of getting many people to follow them.
Caesar.
Okay. Rashi has a different approach. Rashi, I believe, I did not see this explicitly, I didn't see anybody who says this, but I think it's clear from his commentary, disagrees with Ramban, who holds that Anshei Chayil is a general leadership term defined by the next three. Rashi holds there are four characteristics that are required of these judges. Let's look at how he defines this first phrase of Anshei Chayil. It's in the very last line in the first column of Rashi. If you want to read it inside with me, Anshei Chayil Ashirim. Wealthy. How does the art school? The art school translates Anshei Chayil as people of means. They're basing themselves on Rashi's translation. The Ramban would not translate Anshei Chayil as people of means. The Ramban would translate Anshei Chayil as people of leadership qualities. But the art school, as we've pointed out many times, the art school usually follows Rashi's translation. And Rashi, in the sense, Anshei Chayil means wealthy. And there are various other places throughout Tanakh where the word Chayil is a reference to wealth or means. And therefore, the first characteristic, according to Rashi, is what? That a person be a person of means. He has to be wealthy. Why is it a necessary component, and the first component, in fact, that a judge be wealthy?
She won't be corrupted.
100%. She wouldn't be corrupted. Rashi continues and says, She'ein tzrichin lahachnif. He will not be involved in flattery. He will not ever feel the need to play up to anybody, to kowtow to anybody. I'm not interested. I have everything that I need. Ulahakir Panim, or to show favoritism. Critical element of being a judge is the human reality that if I am not independently wealthy and I rely on anyone else, I am stuck. There's just the human reality. You are supporting me. I need you. I can't be impartial. How could I possibly be impartial with somebody who has that kind of power over me? And therefore, says Rashi, in understanding Yisro's requirement, the first requirement is that you need to be independently wealthy. This is a requirement, by the way, of a Kohen Gadol as well. The Kohen Gadol also has this requirement to be independently wealthy. Judges, kings, all people of Jewish leadership are required to be independently wealthy, not to have to be in any way dependent upon the generosity of an individual or of a group. For us, that's the reality of life. We know that's how it works in politics in the world today. That's how it works in individuals, shuls, in American politics. It's reality. And therefore, to avoid that, if you want to be a judge, it has to be that you do not need that and you are independently wealthy. Now, with that, let's go back to the question. We're going to get there, but I just want to set up the question. The last thing in the list, according to the Torah, is what you have to hate: money. Yeah, funny thing. So I have to be independently wealthy, and I need to hate money. So we'll get there. But I'm just restating your question, which is really based on Rashi. The Ramban wouldn't have that question. According to the Ramban, Anshe Chayil means I'm a great leader. So I could be a great leader and I could hate money. But according to Rashi, it's kind of a funny thing in which I need to be wealthy and hate my money at the same time. Which is not a terrible contradiction, but it requires further study. Let's move on. Number two is the Yirei Elokim. You need to be fearful of Hashem. So we have other things to discuss. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it's worth noting there are two levels of Yiras Elokim. There are two levels of being fearful of Hashem. The first level, the lower level, which is a level, I say lower, meaning it's only level in relationship to the other level, but it's pretty high above most of where we are holding in our daily lives, is being fearful of punishment. I'm afraid of being punished. I fear God in the way that I fear my boss, in the way that I fear my parents, in the way that I fear somebody who has authority over me can dock me from pay, from privileges, from something. So I don't want to get caught because I don't want to have to deal with the consequences. Now, I say low level, but it's a very high level for a person to live their life, because it's easy to be fearful of my boss when the person who hands me my paycheck every day also evaluates me every week and says to me, if you fail your evaluations, you'll be out of the job. So to say that I fear my boss, I have a level of making sure that I do things right because I don't want to lose my job, is very tangible. It's right in front of me. I have bills to pay. And that level of fear is easy. To say that I fear God, what I don't see, I don't have the punishments don't come out of the sky the second I do something wrong. Lightning bolts don't rain out of the sky. We know that. So to say that I walk around with that level of fear is really a very high level of emunah. It's a very high level of traith, of trust and of faith and of an understanding of the way that the world works, despite the fact that it's not seen and in front of me, I still have it. The higher level that we strive for after we've achieved that other level, which again is not simple to achieve, is where you fear, as the Siddur Yisharim writes in his introduction, he writes, Yiras Haroi Mimus, I simply am fearful of the greatness, the indescribable presence of God Himself. I am in awe more than in fear of Him. I'm frightened the way that I stand in front of the king. Not because I'm afraid that the king is going to punish me. I haven't done anything. But just standing in his presence is frightening. I'm in the presence of such greatness. People always will talk about this when they get into presence of greatness. They tense up. They can't speak anymore. They're just so overwhelmed with awe in front of whom they're speaking. If you've ever gone to court, sometimes you will experience that. Just it could be like small claims court or traffic court, and you're standing in front of a judge and you think the whole thing is a joke and you're angry, and then you get up there and there's a judge who says, yeah, and it's you're just like very small all of a sudden. It's just very hard to get the words out because there's somebody big I'm standing in front of who can do a lot of things and who's powerful, and they're not. I mean, in the scheme of things, they're not, but they're much more powerful than I am. So imagine, you know, multiply that 100-fold, 1,000-fold. The Siddur Yisharim writes, the way that this would manifest is v'yevush megiduloso al kol tenua shehuba lehisnoi eya. You are embarrassed before his greatness on every action that you take, every move you make. You're a little embarrassed, like being watched. You know, the great way that I love thinking about this is if you've ever gone to any social event, a birthday party or a dinner or whatever it is, and then the guy with the video camera comes rolling around. Right, how does everybody's actions totally change when you're on camera? All of a sudden, everybody like tenses up, go away, oh no, like it's going to be seen, I'm going to be recorded, who knows who's going to watch it. When you feel like you're being watched, you right away, totally, everything changes. Because, you know, someone's watching, and someone's going to see, and someone's going to do this. So we totally change our behavior when that happens. So the level of Yiras Elokim that a person eventually wants to try to strive for is where I feel that always. I am in the presence of greatness. I am being watched by that person of greatness. And I'm almost embarrassed by every move that I make. I'm humiliated. Human is the wrong word. I'm humbled, is the word that I wanted to say, because of that. And that's a level in which you are totally aware of the presence before whom you are standing, speaking. He writes, Kol Shekein, when you're davening, when you're learning his Torah, when you're really engaging God himself, how small you feel because of the greatness of the presence in whose world you stand. And that's the second level. The smaller, the lighter level of Yiras Elokim is just being fearful of punishment. The greater level is what we call Yiras Haromimus. I'm just afraid of the awe of the greatness of His presence. Okay, just wanted to go through the Anshei Emes. Let's move forward. So that was category number two. So they need to be an Anshei Chayil. According to Rashi, means they need to be independently wealthy. According to the Ramban, means it's a general term that says they need to be great leaders. They need to be able to manage large masses of people, have all the characteristics which that requires, be it strength, be it wisdom, be it smarts, be it good looks, whatever that requires to be a great leader, they have it. Second thing they need to have is they need to be on a spiritual level in which they fear God. And number three, they need to be Anshei Emes. Anshei Emes. Now how would you translate Anshei Emes?
People of truth.
Yeah, that's what I would say. How would you define a person of truth? What will allow us to say this person is a person of truth and this person is not a person of truth?
If you catch him in the lie.
Excellent. That's what I would have thought also, right? Rashi says something a little bit different. I wouldn't have thought you even needed to say Anshei Emes, people of truth. They don't tell lies, right? Says Rashi. Rashi is on the top line of your second column. Anshu Anshei Emes Elu Ba'alei Havtacha. These are people who are Baal Havtacha. What does it mean to be a Baal Havtacha? A person who you can rely on, a person who keeps their word. Baal Havtacha Shehem Kedai Usmoch Al Divrehem. They are people who you can listen to. When they say something, You go with what it is that they had to say. They say things and they keep their word. Says the Maharal explaining why this is. Kimi she'enu bal haftacha shafalhu b'fnei adam. You're very lowly in the eyes of man. If a person says something and doesn't keep that word, not held in high esteem by people. No one's going to listen to him. If you, in general, say things and don't keep your word, when you tell me that I need to do something, you render a judgment against me and say that I need to do X, Y, or Z, I'm not going to listen to you. Because his words, in general, are not that which we like to rely on. I'm going to share with you a Pachad Yitzchak, a piece from the Rav Kuttner. Yitzchak Kuttner was their Shiva in New York and Chaim Berlin. So he writes, why is this so much worse than just somebody who uses their words inappropriately? Anshei Emes, Rashi says, you know what it means when Yitzchak says you need to be an Anshei Emes? It means when you say things, you keep your word. And not just that you either don't always tell the truth. Rashi could have just left it the same. But left it with simple meaning. It could have said people who makes it even worse than someone who speaks Lashon Hara or anything like that. So Rav Hunter writes that the idea of being a Baal HaPtacha, a person who keeps one's word, is that the ikar of the Adam, the principal, primary part of a person, when man was created, is through his koach hadibur, his ability to speak. When God creates man, in the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, we've quoted here many times, and we've quoted elsewhere many times, he blows into the nostrils of man the breath of life, and man becomes a nefesh chaya, becomes a living being. And the Targum, the Unklus on the side of the Aramaic translation of the Torah understands what does that phrase mean that he became a nefesh chaya, became a living being when it was breathed into him the breath of life, he became a ruach memalo, it became a speaking spirit. And that in our ability to speak, in our ability to communicate with words, we were somehow distinguished from all the other animal kingdoms out there through our seichel, through our knowledge, our intellectual capabilities, and our ability to communicate that to others, we were elevated into the status of man. Says Rav Huna, Rav Huttner, excuse me, somebody who takes his words and uses them and doesn't fulfill them is far worse than somebody who corrupts his speech through Lashon Hara or late sonos. He speaks badly about other people, or he's a jokester. He never he makes fun of people, whatever you may say. He says, because Shekein ha'odam ha'oiver al isurei dibur halalu. Somebody, let's say, about Lashon Hara, a person who speaks a lot of Lashon Hara, who poigem es koyach ha'dibur, he ruins, so to speak, his ability to speak. He uses them for inappropriate ways. He takes his ability to speak, and instead of saying nice things, he says inappropriate things. He makes people feel bad using his words. Certainly inappropriate. But somebody who's a medaber ve'enu mekayim, somebody who speaks but doesn't fulfill what he speaks, is masru mekalkel ercho shel koach hadibur. He devalues the ability to speak at all. The ability to speak is the ability to communicate, and he's taken that and not just used it inappropriately. Took my ability to communicate, and I use it for what it's for. I communicated something. I just communicated a bad thing instead of a good thing. So it's certainly a negative thing, and it's a bad thing that a person should do something like that, that he should take his ability to speak and make somebody feel bad with his words instead of making somebody feel good with his words. But the value of the ability to speak is the same. It's still a powerful tool that's been used, that we've been endowed with as human beings, the ability to communicate. I'm still using that in the way that it was supposed to be used. I just use it, meaning in the power that it has, just in an inappropriate way. When I speak and don't fulfill the words that I say, what do people then do with my words? They really become meaningless. You've now taken that which distinguished you as a human, this new ability to communicate, and you've said it's meaningless. The words that I say have no bite behind them because I say things, but I don't fulfill them. So what do people do with somebody who speaks things and doesn't listen, doesn't fulfill what they say? You basically disregard what it is that they're saying. And I'll only listen to you once or twice if you tell me you're going to do something and then you don't carry it through. I stop listening to you. That's different than if you speak negatively. When you speak negatively, you're still using your words in a very powerful way. You are a powerful person. You are using a powerful tool, your words. You're just using a powerful tool in a negative way. But it's still the Adam, the person behind the words, is still just as powerful as he was before. He's just dangerous because he's using them in a negative way. Person who speaks and doesn't fulfill that which he says things and he doesn't carry them out, I disregard what he's saying. He's not using a powerful tool in a negative way. He's lost the tool. When you lose your tool, and this is the tool which distinguishes us as people, one of the critical mass things that make us human, our ability to speak, you've been lowered in the eyes of men. You know, you're not in the same stature. You say things all you want, like a bird chirping. I don't really care what you're saying. They have no meaning behind it. So says the Pachad Yitzchak in explaining this Rashi, why is it that Rashi says, Anshei Emes, these speakers of truth, he says it's more than just speakers of truth. Of course, if you speak a lie, you're disqualified. I don't need Yisro to come along and say, Moshe Rabbeinu, don't take liars for judges. Shkrach. Thank you. Because if it weren't for you, I would have had a bunch of liars on the bench. Of course, that's obvious. That goes without saying. What did he mean when he said Anshe MS? So not that they're lying, you have to have people who, when they speak, they fulfill what it is that they say. It's a much higher, refined level of Anshei Emes. Of course it means people who speak the truth. That goes without saying. But it even means someone, if you say things and you don't carry them through, you're also disqualified from being a judge because people won't take you seriously. You've lost stature in the eyes of mankind to use such a tool and basically nullify that tool of Dibur, nullify the tool of being able to speak because you don't carry out the words that you say. Doesn't need to be stressed, but just these are like when I went through these, just the characteristic that Yisro says are just such beautiful lessons in the way that we relate. When someone says things and doesn't fulfill them, as a person, they're lowered in our eyes. Like you're wasting one of the most powerful tools that we have, and you're making it, you're rendering it meaningless because of that. There's a the Rav Hunter quotes a Gemara. It's a Mishnah actually in Maseches Bava Metzia. The Mishnah says, in terms of the laws of the buying and selling. So there, like in all aspects of halacha, there are intricate laws. If I buy something from you, at what point do I, as the buyer, have a right to still say, you know what, forget it, I changed my mind? And at what point has the sale been considered complete and I can't change my mind? Because there's a verbal agreement, there's the handing of money over, and then there's my accepting of the actual material. So at what point am I allowed as the buyer or as the seller, they discuss it from both ways in the Mishnah, allowed to say, you know what, I changed my mind. I don't want to sell it, or I can get a better offer. So the Gemara says that if you give money, if I as the buyer hand over the money, but have not yet taken possession of the goods, so in halacha, the deal is not yet done, and I'm allowed to renege and say, you know what, forget it, I changed my mind, I don't want to purchase this. But if I do that, if I went so far as to give the money, and then I say I don't want it, while I'm in my rights from a possession perspective, I have not yet taken possession of it, I can take it back and get my money back, there's a curse upon such a person. And the way the Mishnah describes the curse is Mishapara, he who punished from the Dor HaMavol, the door of the generation of the flood, and a generation of the dispersion of the, after the Tower of Babel, the one who punished those two generations should punish the one who reneges on his word after handing over money and not yet taking possession of the goods. So Rav Hunter has the whole thing saying the reason why is that someone who has given over his word, so to speak, and has accepted, this is what I want to buy, here's the money, and then reneges, even though in halacha you're allowed to, but you've already entered into a role, you've entered into a status where your actions, your words are becoming more meaningless, and therefore there's this whole curse, so to speak, put upon such a person that even though in halacha you're allowed to, but it's frowned upon in the strongest of terms by the sages, that's not how Jews act. Our actions, our words are powerful, are meaningful, and when they become meaningless, everything falls apart. So in halacha you're allowed to, but there's a curse upon you for doing something like that. Okay, let's move to the last one. This is also a very difficult phrase. Sone Batsa. What does it mean to be a hater of Batsa? So again, I mentioned the word Batsa is used in Tanakh in at least four different contexts. It's used in benefit. There's no benefit. It means money. It means bribes. It means oppression. So let's do two on the most simple level. We have two pshatim, two explanations on just a simple level. One is from the Unkos, from the Targum on the side of your page, the Aramaic translation. He reads it, I'll give you his exact words. Just lost my place. He reads it as follows as, Disanon with Kabbalah Mammon, people who hate to receive money. What does it mean, those who hate money? So he keeps the translation as money, but it doesn't mean one who hates money. It means one who hates to receive money. He adds that, that's critical. We never really studied the Targum together, but it's literally about a word-for-word translation. He's translated the Torah almost word-for-word into Aramaic, so when he adds words or changes phrases, the commentators note that and point out that he's saying something significant. And he added a major, major word here to the phrase. The phrase means he hates money. Targum says, well, what do I mean he hates money? Why is hating money a requisite for being a judge? It doesn't mean he hates money, it means he hates receiving money. What would be the meaning behind somebody who hates receiving money? So that would again flow with what we said from the first characteristic. He's a wealthy person, I don't like getting things from anybody else. It's a way of setting up a fence around bribery. A person who likes getting things is susceptible to bribes because he's either established himself, people know, or just as a person, he likes getting things. Person doesn't like receiving. Anything that I have, I earned, I bought, I worked for it on my own. I don't want freebies. I don't like freebies. In fact, I hate freebies. So ne matanos yichya, the pasuk in Mishlei says, one who hates gifts will live. Don't want free things from other people. He's qualified to be a judge. He is someone who we're not afraid is going to get caught up in the web of bribery or people trying to do favors for him or anything like that. And that's how the Targum understands it. So that the four things, according to the Targum, would you have anshei chayil. Whether or not we learn like Rashi or the Ramban, it means someone who is either wealthy, somebody who's a leader, someone who fears God, a speaker of truth, which Rashi defined is more than just not telling lies, but somebody who when you say something, you do it, you keep your word, and you don't like receiving things. That's how the Targum understands Sone Vatsa. The Ramban has a different interpretation of the word Vatsa, and he says on the most simple meaning, it's from the word oppression. Person who hates oppression. That's how the Ramban says it. So if the Ramban were writing the art scroll, he would translate as one who hates oppression. He can't stand, says the Ramban, seeing people being taken advantage of. He can't stand seeing a lack of justice in the world. The Ramban writes, in order to be a judge, it can't be that your attitude towards things are, alright, that didn't work out so fairly. No. You have to be passionate about straightening the wrongs and the crookedness that's out there in the world, about wanting things to be straight, wanting things to be fair and correct. And as much as we humans can do that, obviously the life is as it is, and we'll always have those questions to God, why is this person suffering, why did this person have that happen to him, and this, that we can't answer. But between man and man, Bein Adam L'Chavero, the Ramban understands a Sone Botza is somebody who cannot tolerate seeing that type of oppression. And when they see thievery, they see oppression, their mind cannot tolerate it. Every desire that they have is to spare and to save the one who's been robbed or been oppressed from the one who is doing it. Which is another interesting approach, as the Ramban would say, that would be included in our list of somebody who needs to be passionate about justice in order to be a judge. Okay, that's as far as pshat goes. I always like to peel away the layers. So on the simple meaning, you either have somebody who hates receiving gifts. That's the way the Targum Unklos understands this fourth requirement. The Ramban holds it's a requirement to be someone who hates injustice. Passionate about straightening the rights of the wrong. Rashi has another approach. Rashi says, now he's going to deal with the simple translation of the word batza is money, the way that the Targum dealt with it, but to hate money doesn't make sense. So how did the Targum deal with the problem of hating money? He added a word. It means you hate receiving money. So Rashi keeps the words of the Chumash as it is. It means you hate money. What does it mean to hate money, especially in light of Bert's question that according to Rashi, I need to be wealthy? So what does it mean that I hate money? Rashi says, Sisonin es mamoinam badin. I hate when my money is involved in a court case. What does that mean? As the Gemara says, Rashi says, any judge who has had money taken from him in court is disqualified from being a judge. A judge who's had money taken from him in court is disqualified, and a judge, according to Rashi, has to hate having his money in court. What exactly does that mean, that I hate my money being involved in court? And if I've had money taken from me, I'm disqualified. So there are two understandings here of what Rashi means. The Ramban has an understanding, and then the Maral has an understanding. But the Ramban understands Rashi as follows. It's a difficult understanding, which the Maral understands. The Ramban understands, you know what Rashi means when he says you hate having your money in court? It means that, read his words because it's such a difficult translation. I know that I have money that somebody can take from me legally. It's really my money, but legally I have no proof to it. Let's say I lent somebody money, or somebody lent me money, or I lent something without witnesses, or I bought something without witnesses. So if I buy your property without let's say I buy property without proper documentation, without witnesses, so even though I own the property, I have no way to prove it. The status quo in town, as everybody knows, it's been your property. It's been your property for decades. I'm now living on it. If you come into court and claim that's my property, without question, the court's going to rule in your favor. Because you have all the proof, you have all the witnesses that say, yeah, for decades it's been Bert's property, and I have no documentation that it's mine, so I'm going to lose in such a case. Says the Ramban, what Rashi means that he hates having his money in court, he hates being in a monetary court so much that even if he knows that it's really his, but if he were to go to court, he would lose, such a judge would want to give it right back without even going to court. And that if the judge allowed the case to go to courts, that would disqualify him, even though he's really correct. And I did buy it. I bought it with all legal things, but because I want to so distance myself from anything that would be inappropriate, if I allow myself to be taken to court, even though I'm correct, that disqualifies me from being a judge. That's what the Ramban understands in Rashi. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Kamaral says, he yells and screams, that's absolutely ridiculous. How could it be, if I'm really right, and I bought the property, and I just don't have the proper proof, I should be disqualified from a judge because some schnook who's a liar claims that it's his? It's really mine. He knows it's mine. I just don't have the right proof. He totally disregards that understanding. The real understanding of Rashi is as follows, and he says, you know what Rashi means when he says you hate having your money in court, and if it's been taken from you, you're disqualified? Exactly as it sounds like. If you've ever been taken to court, and you lost, you are disqualified from being a judge. Because if you've been taken to court, that means you have been fighting and saying, no, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, and you refuse to see that which the judges saw, that it's not really yours, and you don't have an appropriate claim to it, and there's a love of money that you must have, which is blinding you. And the way that it has manifested itself, that you are a little bit like the rest of us, you need to be a judge, you need to be above us. How have you shown yourself to be like the rest of us? Because somebody had a claim against you, and you weren't able to see that he was correct, and you went to court, you lost. And the judges said, you own the money. And if we see that you're a person who, when the halacha was not in your side, and you refuse to give the money anyway, you have to go into court and go through the whole proceedings, you're not a person who's qualified to be a judge. You're a little bit too attached to your money. If you're too attached to your money, you're going to be attached to my money. You're not going to be able to judge fairly a case. So if you're a person who has owed money, that's fine, and you've always paid up before it's gone to court. If you go to court and you win, then says the moral, of course that's fine. You don't have to go to court and win. That means someone owed you money and he wouldn't pay and you went to court. But if you are taken to court and you lose, then you're a person who showed a little bit too much of a connection to money and you therefore disqualified yourself from being a judge, which is not at all a contradiction to being wealthy. Right? Just the opposite. So the way Rashi would see it, your qualifications are wealthy, but it needs to be wealth that you've never been taken to court and lost. Okay, you could be wealthy, but it's never been where you've been greedy about it. If I owe you money, I'll pay you. But if you owe me money, you pay me. But I'm not going to court and losing a case because if I pay without that. I don't want to be involved in that. But those are the qualifications. According to Rashi, what comes out, you have four qualifications to be a judge. You must be independently wealthy, fearing of God, not just a speaker of truth, but one who says things and is known when so-and-so says things, you could be guaranteed it's going to be done. And you're a person who never gets taken, you've never been taken to court and lost a monetary case. Those are your four qualifications according to Rashi. According to Ramban, it's really three qualifications. You need to be defined as a leader. Part of the way that we define a leader is obviously you need to be intelligent. That doesn't even need to be said. And the three qualifications for being a leader would be being fearful of God, a speaker of truth, and the way the Ramban understood Sone Botza is one who hates oppression, someone who's passionate against the injustice in the world. And if you have that sense of passion against injustice, that would then qualify you for being a judge. And you have the Targum Unculus, who added the understanding of somebody who hates receiving things, also part of not being subject to bribery. If I hate receiving things, I'm not afraid that you're going to be willing to do anything in order to receive money. That's an overview of some of the opinions as to the qualifications that Yisro required for the judges. A question that I have that I don't have an answer to, according to the Ramban, it worked out very well that when Moshe found his judges, the only thing the Torah says that he found were Anshei Chayil. So according to the Ramban, that worked out very well. The Ramban held out with the umbrella phrase of leadership qualities, which included all of the other specifics. That's why the Torah says he found Anshei Chayil. According to Rashi, And this is a question that I have, and I'll just leave you with. Anshechayo, what did Anshechayo mean? It meant that they were wealthy. But there are four things. You need to be wealthy, fearful of God, speakers of truth, and people who haven't lost monetary cases in court. According to Rashi, when Moshe goes out to the people and finds judges, the only qualification that he found is that they were wealthy. Doesn't say anything about finding people who are fearful of God, nothing about speakers of truth, nothing about hating or losing monetary cases in court. And I'm not quite sure exactly how to deal with that. I know that's discussed, but that would come out. It works out a little bit better according to the Ramban, but nonetheless, that's how Rashi wants it. Those are some of those ideas as far as that goes. All right, good afternoon.